Thursday, February 6, 2018, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City, Denver, Colorado. You know, we get together every single weekday, and we talk sports with a dose of common sense, maybe just a little bit of sarcasm here or there, and we are happy to have you with us today. I hope that you have found a way past that hangover Monday, the day after the Super Bowl, and you are returning to form today. Hey, get some Tylenol, get some ginger ale, whatever it is you need today, get after it today. Right back to work today on Tuesday. Or maybe you're in Philadelphia. Maybe it's a little different for you. Get some water. Flush the pepper spray out of your eyes. Put some ointment on those burns. Whatever you may need to get going on this Tuesday, get after it. Happy Tuesday to you. If you would like to contact us and tell us exactly what issues you might be dealing with today, we would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. You know, we've got something a little different for you today. While we still have to wrap up the NFL, and the Olympics are beginning later this week, and the NBA is heating up, and March Madness is just around the corner, we're going to get to all of those things. But today, I have a guest that I want to bring on in just a few minutes. And this guy knows sports. But I'm telling you right now, he knows sports from a completely different perspective. And he's going to explain that perspective here in just a few minutes. I think you're really going to enjoy it. We will get to that in just 1 minute. A couple things coming out in the world of breaking news. First off, the Detroit Lions have officially named New England Patriots defensive coordinator Matt Patricia their new head coach. Of course, the 43-year-old Patricia, he has spent his entire NFL coaching career in New England. He started off as an offensive assistant, worked his way up to defensive coordinator by 2012. He has made 3 Super Bowls running the Patriots defense. I know that this deal was already in place, right? But are the Detroit Lions looking at Patricia after he and his defense got torched in Super Bowl 52 and wondering, okay, what in the world did we get ourselves into? I thought this guy was supposed to be good. I thought this guy was the leader that we want for this franchise. He sure didn't look like the leader you'd want on Sunday, did he? Patriots defense got lit up. Speaking of the Patriots, you know, a lot of things floating around the New England Patriots right now after that loss in Super Bowl 52. Why did starting cornerback Malcolm Butler get benched? I mean, it wasn't like the defense was being successful without him. You're telling me you couldn't have used Butler maybe a little bit, just a little bit here or there? Why did he get benched? Makes me wonder if there was some sort of a coaching decision prior to the game or even the night before where they told Butler, hey, we're going to start somebody else. We're going to let somebody else have some snaps. We think it's a better matchup for us. And Butler just lost it. Like Butler just, it didn't go well with him. Like he went off on the coach. Like that's what it makes me wonder. I'm not saying that is what happened. I'm just saying it makes me wonder if that's what happened. Few other things about the Patriots, though. What's Rob Gronkowski going to do? You know, after the game, he kind of acted like retirement wasn't out of the question. And you can say he's just talking about retiring because it was a tough loss. But hey, this is a guy with huge health issues. Back injuries, arm injuries, now a major head injury. Makes me wonder if that shot to the head made him a little bit cautious. If he's looking at it and saying, hey, not sure I want to keep doing this. What is Josh McDaniels going to do? Are the Patriots going to lose both their offensive and defensive coordinators this year? You know, we have so many teams with so many offseason questions this year, but I'm telling you, the New England Patriots are going to be very, very interesting to watch. You know, we didn't get a chance to talk about it yesterday because of the Super Bowl postgame show, but you know, the Pro Football Hall of Fame did induct 8 new members on Saturday into its halls. Newest members of the Pro Football Hall of Fame include contributor Bobby Bethard, linebacker Robert Brazil, safety Brian Dawkins. Wow, what a week for the Philadelphia Eagles, right? Win the Super Bowl and get Dawkins in. Guard Jerry Kramer, linebacker Ray Lewis, wide receiver Randy Moss, wide receiver Terrell Owens, and linebacker Brian Urlacher. Definitely a younger class, you know, with some of these guys going in, but a pretty solid group. Moss and Owens, I know the media was making a big deal out of whether they should get in or whether they would both get in. Come on, we knew they were both going to make it. That was not a surprise at all. But the guys that I worry about, I don't worry about guys like Moss and Owens. They're going to get in. But, you know, I'm genuinely happy for a guy like Jerry Kramer. He's been waiting forever to get in. And he deserves to be in. Yes, he played guard, but he played guard for those Vince Lombardi era Green Bay Packers teams that were winning titles. And he had to do some work, because with Vince Lombardi, those linemen were pulling, leading the runners around the corners. Kramer was the guy that led Bart Starr into the end zone in the famous Ice Bowl game. He has to be in the Hall of Fame. And you know, I think the thing that makes me the happiest, I'm glad this wasn't one of those posthumous inductions, because those are always ridiculous. Hey, we're going to put you in and we know you're already dead. Sorry about that. Get Jerry Kramer in the Hall. I'm glad that that finally happened. Okay. Hey, coming back, we are going to be joined by a guy that knows sports, and he is involved in sports, but it is in a completely different way. And he has a completely unique perspective on the world of sports. Trust me, you do not want to miss this. Joining us right now on the Daily Dose is a man that has a completely different perspective on the world of sports. Because while maybe you played a little bit, or maybe you coached a little bit, or even refereed, our guest today has seen it from a different side. Joining us today on the Daily Dose, Dr. Justin Newman is an orthopedic surgeon and a sports medicine specialist in Parker, Colorado, right here. Dr. Newman, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate you taking the time to join us here on the Daily Dose.
Absolutely, Clint. Thanks for having me.
Now, I'm not just talking to Dr. Newman because he's a nice guy that I've met on the street. He is a nice guy. But he actually treated me for a tear that I had in my rotator cuff. And here is the surest sign that he's a good guy. And it impressed me right from the start. I haven't told him this, but it impressed me right from the start. I go in, I have the MRI, we find a tear in my rotator cuff. Now, if an orthodontist sees you or one of your kids and they have like one tooth just slightest bit off, he's putting braces on you once or twice. He's knocking out another semester of his kid's college fund. Dr. Newman tells me, hey, I can do the surgery, but it's a brutal rehab. Let's see if you can rehab the shoulder and just avoid the surgery completely. Who says that? I'll tell you who. A decent, upstanding guy. That is who is joining us today. Not only are you an excellent orthopedic surgeon and obviously an upstanding guy, you have worked with and treated a number of athletes from the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, English Premier League, Olympic athletes, Special Olympic athletes, high school athletes, you name it. You have dealt with a ton of athletes.
I have. And it's what I focus on. So I'm a sports medicine surgeon, which means I'm an orthopedic surgeon. I focus on shoulder, hip, and knee sports-related injuries. I don't do joint replacements. I do some fracture and trauma work. And that comes with sports and with the practice that I have. But the clientele that comes in is like you. They're active. They like to get going. And they want to say, what's the best way of getting me back to doing this? And what are my options? And so that's the way I really practice. I try to lay it all out for you. We start from, I always say, here's option number one. Do nothing. Rub some dirt on it. We're not going to do that. And I just spell out all of the possibilities that you have in front of you. So my background, as an orthopedic surgeon, I've been in the Parker area for 3 years now. Before that, I was at the Stedman Clinic in Vail, where I did a sports medicine fellowship. Prior to that, I was at University of Colorado. I did a residency there. Prior to that, I was at the University of Chicago for med school. And before that, I was fortunate enough to be a Fetcher scholar at the University of Denver. And I'm originally from Colorado, very northeast corner of the state. And being in Colorado, people are exceptionally active. People have high expectations, high demands. And I really like taking care of that patient population. It's people that want to get better. And I have answers, and we can get them better just by your shoulder.
Now, let me ask you this. We haven't discussed this. You obviously have a huge passion for sports, for active people. Were you an athlete growing up?
I was. I played football and wrestling all through high school, dabbled in rugby a little bit in college. And then outside of that, I really enjoy winter sports. So I really enjoy skiing, been getting up with my family to the mountains a few times, mountain biking, running, doing things outside. So, I didn't play D1 sports, but I did play sports through college and still
sure.
Very active with that Colorado lifestyle.
Where was it you grew up? You said northeastern Colorado. Where was it that you grew up?
Holyoke, the town. It's right on the Nebraska border.
Yeah, I know.
My family farms and ranches out there, and we're split right over the border. So half Colorado and half the world.
I see. So you grew up probably, I'm just assuming, probably watching Denver Broncos, but probably also watching Colorado, watching Nebraska, unfortunately. Well, at least that's from my perspective. Watching Nebraska Cornhusker and stuff, yeah.
Yeah. My mom's flown a Husker flag in our yard since
I
was born. And then, growing up, it was before the Rockies, so I was a White Sox fan, and happened to be in South Chicago and they won the series. So that's
oh, wow.
That's definitely Broncos fan, true and true. So.
That's awesome. So how old were you when you knew you wanted to go into the medical field, but you wanted to still be involved in the sports aspect of it?
Very young. I know that I wrote my thesis on getting out of eighth grade on how to get into medical school. So I know that even from that young age, I was on this path and had a passion for, you know, taking care of people that have a problem. And it's really pretty straightforward. If you have a problem, I have an answer. You want to get better. I want you to get better. And it's a really rewarding branch of medicine to be in.
That's amazing that you knew that young. When I was in eighth grade, I don't even know that I knew where I was even at half the time. That's pretty impressive.
I'm glad it worked out that way. Yeah.
Now, you cover a ton of different sports, like we talked about. You've been involved in a number of different sports. Is there one sport that you prefer to cover, one that you enjoy more than the other?
Not really. Sports coverage can mean a lot of things. So most recently, this being the Olympic season, I've been involved with the U.S. snowboarding team. So I'm a team physician for the U.S. ski team and the U.S. snowboarding team. This time of year with, you know, covering these events that are Olympic qualifiers is a lot of fun. The stakes are high. Everybody's pushing it. And working particularly with snowboard and covering the half pipe is a lot of fun. It's a great environment. You're right there with the athletes. You get to see them. So I really enjoy covering snowboarding, particularly the half pipe. They're all a little different. You know, covering the downhill athletes when you're standing at the top with Lindsey Vonn. Yeah, it's fun to hang out, but as soon as they drop the gate, you don't get to see them, and you're just listening to the radio and they're calling if they need you. So half pipe's a lot of fun. I cover a lot of football, a lot of wrestling, and, you know, just whatever other sports are down here, Ironman events or triathlons, whatever, wherever they need coverage and they ask me to cover, and I'll work with those teams.
When you're covering something like downhill and they do give you how are you getting down there? How do you do that?
The downhill is something else. So you stand at the top, and when you're covering those teams, you basically have a portable hospital on your back. And so if they say athlete down, you quickly grab your bag and you click into your skis and you wait. And often say, you know, athletes back up, they're getting off. But if they're down and they stay down, if they're in the net and they can't get up, you have to know the course well enough because I can't ski that course anyway, now, particularly with my skis. And with that pack on your back, it's just basically impossible to ski down to them. So you have to know the course well enough so you know where to cut in on the course so you can slip down to them and either meet or beat the ski patrol to that area and figure out what you need to do.
So when you get to an injured athlete, and whether it's skiing, whether it's football, whether it's wrestling, first thing you're trying to do is locate the injury. The first thing you're trying to do is calm them down. What are you doing when you arrive there with the athlete?
The first thing you do is you make sure that they are okay from a patient standpoint. We call it the ABCs, airway, breathing, circulation. So you want to make sure that they're breathing all right, that their heart's working well, they didn't have any either major head trauma, any blunt chest trauma, that they have cardiac issues going on, and then make sure their circulation is going okay. So that's always number one, make sure they're doing okay.
Okay.
And that's hard sometimes. You'll get to an athlete and they're down, and they'll have a leg or an arm that's obviously pointing in the wrong direction. You almost need to look past that immediately and make sure that they're doing okay. You don't want to miss something like a blunt chest trauma. You know, we see this with kids, you know, little league kids, where they take a ball to the chest and they go to a cardiac arrhythmia or have some problems with their heart. So first you want to make sure that you're not missing something that's going to kill them. As soon as you've seen that, then you start looking at cervical spine. You don't want to miss something that if they have an injury to their cervical spine, you don't want to get them up too quickly and then they can get paralyzed and then you have a whole other set of problems. So look at them from a patient overall first. Make sure that there's nothing major that's going to cause them any permanent damage as a patient. And then the next step is addressing the limb. So, you know, looking at the leg, is it the right direction? If it's not, you put it in the right direction, check the pulse, check the nerves, and then start assessing them and see what you need to do from there to, you know, with skiing to get them off the slope, whether that be splint them and then, you know, get them set up a ski patrol to get into the toboggan and get them down or what that may be.
Okay, I want to talk to Dr. Newman about some of the injuries that he has seen. And I want to talk to him about some of the injuries that we have seen in sports and exactly what it is that we're looking at when they take place. We're going to ask him all of that and more right after this. Just a quick reminder, you know you've got to go get something for Valentine's Day for that special someone. You better hurry and get over to lootcrate.com/dailydose for all of the latest pop culture collectibles featuring your favorite TV shows, movies, and video games. February's Loot Crate theme, it's called Protect. They've got items from Black Panther, Fallout, The Expanse, and Pacific Rim Uprising. But, you know, if you head over to Loot Crate, you can find items from pretty much any franchise you could possibly think of. The best part about ordering from Loot Crate, when you check out, just make sure you type Daily Dose into the coupon box. We are going to get you 10% off of your order. Make sure you head over to lootcrate.com. I have to ask this. I know the listeners are going to want to know. Got to ask, what is the worst injury that you've seen?
The worst injury I saw this year was covering one of the local high school football teams. The player was coming around to get the quarterback, who's coming from a end linebacker position, came through, went up, twisted his leg, went down. Couldn't get up, so we run on the field, and obvious deformity about his knee. Something just didn't look quite right. And so what he'd done is dislocated his knee. To dislocate your knee, it's not something simple like tearing an ACL. You have to have multiple ligaments that are torn in order to allow the tibia to come out from under the femur. So look at him, again, ABCs. You look at him, make sure head, neck, everything else is doing well. Make sure he's breathing fine, and look at the knee. Check the pulses immediately. So we had great pulses when I got there. We look at the knee. I was able to reduce the knee, so I got the tibia back under the femur. They felt immediately better. And his comment was, Doc, give me some duct tape. I'm going back in.
Sure.
The issue with that is when the knee dislocates, the artery in the back of the knee can get stretched. Even though he has a great pulse right then, I know that there's a very high risk of him having an injury inside that artery that can then clot. So that patient, he gets sent to the hospital immediately. As soon as the game's over, I go check on him. Those pulses that were great when I left the field, when I put him into the ambulance, the last thing I did before he left was check his pulse. By the time I get to the hospital, his pulses are gone. And so that is a very bad injury. That is, you know, it's minutes that matter at that point trying to save the leg. So he had to be put on a helicopter, flown to a level one trauma center where they can do a vascular bypass, stabilize that knee. And that's not even worrying about the ligaments in his knee. You have to get the blood supply to that knee, and minutes really matter. He was very close to losing that leg because you just don't get the blood supply to it. If you don't get the blood supply, you get something called compartment syndrome where there's too much swelling, and you can very quickly lose the leg. So that's pretty fresh in my mind, and it's a bad injury for something that, you know, he felt so much better after I got the knee back in. He thought he'd go back in, and you never know where the severity of those things is going to go.
Well, and maybe I'm wrong. I believe those are the same injuries that we saw Chicago Bears tight end Zach Miller and even Minnesota Vikings quarterback Teddy Bridgewater. Wasn't that the same injury, a dislocation, but then it strengthened?
The player from Chicago, it's the exact same injury, and that was about 10 days later that it happened to my player. And it's the exact same thing. So you see him get carted off the field, you know, when you're watching the game on TV, and the next thing you know, he's getting a vascular bypass and fasciotomy that's to release the pressure in the leg. You know, it's very hard to come back from, but it's very easy to even lose your leg when you don't get that blood supply, if you don't get that, you know, immediate prompt intervention to get the blood supply going back to that leg.
Now, I know it's individual basis and that kind of thing, but can an athlete return to full form from that? Or is that something you can ever come back from?
There are people who return, but it's a very long road. It's a very hard recovery. From a couple standpoints, there are people, both collegiate as well as pros, who have come back from that. But you think about what that means. You think about something more simple, like the ACL. We all know, you know, Carson Wentz, and we see all these people with the ACL. Even at the highest level, the ability to come back from an ACL is very limited. The majority of those players don't come back or don't come back to the same level they were before. So in addition to the ACL, you've also torn your MCL or your PCL, or what we call your posterolateral corner on the outside part of your knee. It's that constellation of all those injuries that makes it really hard to come back. They can, and there's great success stories out there, but it's a very long uphill battle to get there. And the other thing we see with that is you take somebody who's a pro athlete or a very high-level high school athlete, and they sustain that injury. There's a huge mental component of this. It's very hard for them to not be working out, not do what they do for a living, not get that fix that we get when we exercise. We need that. And the mental road is also very difficult to come back.
How do they repair the artery? You talked about the artery being stretched and it making it so thin for any blood to pass through there. I'm assuming that there's, when they perform the surgery, that they open that back up so that there's better flow through that?
Yeah, so they, what they'll do, and this is not what I do, it's kind of out of my realm, but what they'll have to do is bypass that area. So the artery will get a very bad stretch injury on it. We call it an intimal injury, which means it's torn on the inside, the outside's not torn. That stretch or tear on the inside is then rough. That causes a blood clot to form. And that blood clot is, it's very thick, and there's no way to get through that quickly in that situation. So what they'll have to do is you end up with a big incision immediately on the back of the knee. Oftentimes we'll put an external fixator, which is a big carbon fiber frame that goes over the front of the side of the knee to hold it stable, because you can't have it keep popping in and out. Find the artery above the clot, and generally they start with putting in some sort of a plastic tube, so that that tube allows the blood to bypass that area to let the blood supply get in there immediately. And then they'll have to put a graft in there, and generally that is stealing an artery, or not an artery, but a vein from another location that they can put in there. And then it's a very, you know, it's a meticulous stitching to suture that back in watertight fashion.
Wow.
So that one end's flowing to the other.
Forgive me, that's just absolutely fascinating to me. Maybe
it's fascinating, and it has to happen right then, and it's very, you know, we're not stopping and talking. You're getting on a helicopter, you're going to a place where they can do the vascular work. It's minutes and seconds make a huge difference in trying to keep that leg.
I would imagine. You know, we're starting to hear about this and starting to hear more and more rumors about, you know, these different players going overseas, doing whether it's, you know, blood stuff or doing stem cell stuff. At what point are we going to start seeing any of that coming to the States? Is that a possibility to start seeing stem cell stuff becoming more prevalent here in the States?
We are. This is a conversation I'll have a dozen times a day with my patients. One, it's my patient population. Two, it's Colorado. We want to push the envelope and go as much as we can. The stem cells are it's a fascinating topic. A stem cell is a cell that has the ability to turn into what it needs to turn into. So if you look at how cells are made, we call it differentiation. At some point, we're all just four cells, right? As soon as we're at that very beginning of inception, the stem cells are the cells that have the possibility of turning into what we need them to turn into. So ideally, you know, if you have arthritis in the knee or you have a cartilage defect in the knee, you can take the stem cells, inject those in the knee, they go to that area, they grow and become new cartilage. That is a very pressing issue right now with orthopedics. We can harvest the stem cells, or we can harvest cells that still have some potential to differentiate into something else, to become what we want them to become. The problem is we don't have a great way of having them lock into that area, and we don't understand the signaling well that says to those cells, all right, I need you to turn into cartilage versus I need you to turn into bone versus I need you to turn into a ligament. That's a problem, and that's where there's a Nobel Prize in the waiting. We just don't have the ability to tell those cells to turn into what they need to turn into. So there's all these clinics. There's the Kobe Bryant, a.k.a. clinic in Germany. There's a couple clinics that have now popped up in the Caribbean as well as in Mexico, because they don't have the FDA staring over their shoulders saying, look, you can't do this. So they're right. Able to freely do what they want. But it's really not the same thing when we do stem cell treatment in this country. What it boils down to is we're not allowed to take those cells out and manipulate them or grow them in this country and then put them back in. That's where it's illegal to do that. And that's where the outside of the country, they're able to take those and grow them from a few thousand cells to a few million cells and inject those back in. In this country, when we hear stem cell treatment, generally what they're doing is they're taking your blood or they're taking your bone marrow or they're taking some fat cells and they're breaking that mixture down, concentrating into more of those cells that have the ability to do that and injecting it. But we can't really grow them. The FDA just doesn't let us do that yet. So yeah, that's coming. It's a fascinating approach and it's a fascinating thing. And it will change orthopedics over time, but we're just not there yet.
Sure. No, it's going to be interesting to see how that takes shape over the next few years, because you know how this stuff happens. It just happens so, so quickly. Got to ask you, what is your take on all the head injury problems that we're seeing in football? Obviously, the CTE things, but we're even starting to see a couple of states looking at banning contact football from youth sports. You deal with this in your job. You see some of these kids that are having these injuries, and maybe, you know, maybe that goes over to neurology and that kind of thing, but I know that you deal with this. What is your take on the head injury problems we're seeing in football these days?
I have a lot of takes on that. This is something that's, as you know, has dramatically changed over the past decade or so. When we were playing high school football, you get your bell rung and you get back out there, and it didn't become an issue really until there's multiple times that this has happened. We know much more now, and one concussion can be a big deal. What is very concerning is the second concussion on the brain that is still recovering from the first. We call that the second hit, the second hit phenomenon. And that's where kids or athletes can really get into problems and even die from these. It's that brain that's still recovering that then gets that second insult, and it's just too much, and that can be life-threatening or brain function-threatening. I sit on the medical advisory board for CHASA, Colorado High School Activity Association, and that's something we deal with all the time. And I think that it's a really good thing. We need to pay much better attention to it. And we're starting to get to the point where we understand it well, and we have very specific return to play protocols where I'll see an athlete on Friday night. He gets a concussion. It's on me and the family. I need to get them in to be seen right away. They need to be seen by someone that deals with concussions, start that protocol, and they start coming back. But first, we have to really limit the stimuli, make sure the brain's recovering. So it's no class, it's no cell phone, no screen time. Let the brain recover, and then we progress them back slowly through starting the stimuli and then starting some gentle exercise and ramping up before we get them back. And that generally takes a minimum of 5 to 7 days. So if we're trying to get that patient back by the following week, we need to get that process rolling immediately. There's been a much better acceptance by patients and parents over the past several years, where now I'm having kids come up to me and say, look, I think I have a concussion. Help me out. What do I need to do? Whereas even a few years ago, it was much more taboo. They would try to hide it and just push through it. But the understanding is much better now. There's certain areas, and this may be a little sacrilege to say, where I think we've swung that curve too far the other way, where kids are getting pulled out without a concussion. Someone thinks they might. They have no symptoms. There's a very specific protocol and testing that we do for these patients. Our high school athletes, we get tested, and the pros, we get tested before the season starts. We have a baseline. I compare them to that. Occasionally, I see people get put in that protocol to pull out of the game when there's really no need to. But I'd much rather swing that way. You know, I'd much rather protect them than have the risk of that having a concussion that's then missed and then having that brain get injured a second time.
Very, very interesting. And another thing that we're going to be seeing, we're going to see progress. I mean, I know from, like you said, when we played, you'd get your bell rung. They'd tell you, don't go to sleep or whatever the crazy, you know, method was at the time. But the changes that we've seen over the last 5-10 years, especially, have been dramatic. And I think, you know, it's still kind of going that way. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with football, because I don't know that you can stop the injuries. You can stop the collision. I get, you can't stop it shaking. Can you?
No, you can't. And the technology is getting much better. Everybody sees that the helmets are much better than they were before. You see the new helmets in the NFL, which are now making their ways into college and then high school, where there's a cutout in the front, the idea being that that is going to allow pressure in that area. So there's not so much of a direct blow or rattling of the brain. We're doing much better with the, you know, the padding inside the helmet. And then there's a lot of, you know, through the NFL and a lot of Division I schools are actually monitoring the helmet. So they'll put a device in the helmet or even in the mouth guard that allows them to monitor how many G's that head just took.
Wow.
So they can look at that, correlate that to the symptoms, and that's really the cutting edge right now of where we need to go with that. And I think that stuff's fantastic. And cycling back to your other question with, you know, what about banning contact sports in these younger kids? I think that's good, but there's also a downside to that. We've limited in our younger athletes in Colorado, we've limited how old they can be before they can start heading the ball in soccer.
Right.
So the concern then becomes, well, they're good at soccer and they're playing at a very high level at that 12-year-old, you know, age limit. But now they're coming out and they don't know how to head the ball. So they're not experienced with it. So what kind of trauma are we giving their brains? Because they're already playing at that high level. The ball has a lot of velocity, but they're not familiar with it, right? And so we're concerned that if we swing that pendulum too far, they're not preparing themselves, not learning how to do it correctly. But once they go and start doing it, we may be causing other problems. And that's really where we're at. The jury's out on where this is going to go.
I think you bring up a really good point, because I don't think it's just eliminating these things. I think there's got to be also that side of, let's teach these kids to do it the right way. You know, somehow over in Europe, especially, they're playing football, basically playing rugby or playing, you know, European football rules or whatever it is. They're tackling and they're not wearing helmets. So I do think the teaching side of it is kind of getting lost in this whole thing. If we were teaching our kids a little bit better methods, we might be avoiding some injuries in the backside.
Absolutely. And that's a big part of what I do. It's not just fixing things that have gone wrong, but recognizing issues, teaching, you know, the young players how to do things better. You know, in football, that is not spearing not, you know, no spear tackling, not leading with the head. The NFL has done a great job of leading from the top with that. And then other things, so making sure that they do the right kind of warm-up, they do the right preseason so that the quads are intact, so they're not tearing ACLs at a high rate, you know, making sure we're appropriate strength and then rehab from small injuries so that we don't go back out there in suboptimal fashion and cause another or larger problem because that athlete's not ready to get back there yet.
Very, very interesting stuff. Okay, I got to ask you, you're a former athlete. You perform surgeries every single week. You're getting ready to go into surgery. How is it you get yourself ready? Is there, like, are you going through a routine? Are you doing like the, you know, the pregame kind of thing? Are you listening to music? What are you doing when you're getting ready to prep for surgery? What is the method that you go through?
Hey, you know, honestly, I treat it just like I treat preparing for an athletic event.
Sure.
I go to the gym before, get myself in the right mindset, you know, get a good diet in. Before every surgery, I'll take a few moments and I'll visualize. So I'll review the MRI, right? That's your pregame prep. Look at the MRI, look at my notes, make sure I know exactly everything to know about that patient. Not just what their problem is, but what they're trying to get back to. How they do those things. Treating a defenseman in hockey is different than treating a goalie. So you kind of put them all together in one picture in my mind. Close my eyes and I'll visualize. I'm a big believer in visualization. So you walk yourself through the surgery. You do what I plan to do, what I would expect. Plan A, B, C, D, E, all the way down the line if things go well. And then I'll always stop and say, if something goes wrong, what do I do? What's the bailout? And that makes me prepared when I go in. I'm ready to take it on. And my staff then also knows, look, this is plan F, but if he needs that instrument for plan F, we have to have it in the room so there's no delay. So you're prepped and you're ready to go at every stitch. I always tell my patients that I don't go in the operating room without plans A through F in place. It's almost always A or B, but sometimes you have to be prepared for those outliers or the things you weren't expecting.
Wow. Really, really good stuff. You know, as someone that spent a long time in the coaching profession, I have to say the world kind of missed out on having you as a coach because you'd have been really, really good at it. I can see that right now. Hey, I have to thank you so much for stopping by, spending some time here at the Daily Dose. You know, we're going to have you back, but please know you are welcome anytime. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation with you. I learned a lot. Really, really good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to do it anytime. Thank you very much for having me.
Hey, tomorrow is Wednesday and we have to talk about some of the latest breaking sports news. We're going to be handing out a few NFL season end awards. Plus, we will have our weekly Daily Dose Hump Day Power Rankings. You know you've got to tune in for that. Have to say thank you so much to Dr. Justin Newman for stopping by. We truly enjoyed your visit. Thank you all for listening to the Daily Dose. For all of you that share the show, that tell your friends, that email us, text us, message us, whatever it might be, thank you very, very much. It is appreciated. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all tomorrow. Have a great Tuesday.